Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Stone Cold Shots. This is the professional wrestling podcast where the shots are cold and the takes are hot. Every episode here, every couple of weeks, we rate, review, recap a professional wrestling pay-per-view or a pape. This week, we're condensing a whole two-parter down into a one-parter. Before we get into this, why don't we talk about, let's condense another two-parter down into a one-parter. We've already kind of talked about this off-pod, but this is going to be the official be-all, end-all discussion. Mm-hmm. Introduce yourselves to the Stone Cold Shots universe. Tell them your name and tell them, are you team all in or team all out?
Wow.
What did we like better?
Wow. Okay, so I'll go first. I'm the internet darling. My name is Josh Felix Pryor. Okay. Yeah, all right. Listen to that. Pretty calm down. Yeah, so, I mean, I will, you know, just kind of set the table that they were both very good. They both were excellent papes. I feel like the All Out pape was, you know, maybe unexpected to land as good. So I think expectations were low and it over-delivered. But I think All In had high expectations and then delivered on those expectations. If not, mm-hmm. maybe a little bit more. So I'm going to go for my pick. I'm going to go All In. I think the pageantry, the size of it, it had a very WrestleMania-like feel. And the matches all delivered, I feel like, you know, from start to end, you know, what a show. I watched the pre-show as well, and the pre-show was excellent. So, yeah, just kind of like end to end, I think they really pulled off something that was maybe outside of their scope a little bit, you know, and they're shooting pretty big. And kudos to the gals and pals over there at AEW. They did it.
Was your high spot of All In?
It's tough to say. I feel like, I don't know, like there was a lot of good. I like the thread through the show of MJF and Adam Cole from the pre-show match, which was so much fun, to their match. I feel like that's got to be it for me. Like, not match quality. Like, they were both good matches, but I think just story-wise, I enjoyed that most, the thread of that throughout the show.
Their main event match was, like, you talk about WrestleMania quality. And,
right.
Like, the story beats and the grandiosity of it and the, like,
it's crowd so investment, you know?
It's like the overbooking of it in a way that is very, like, Cody Rhodes but worked, you know?
Because it's a wink, right? Like, MJF is the best babyface in the business right now because he knows exactly what he's fucking doing. He's such a shithead, like, white meat babyface that it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. My only gripe with it, I wish that they had teased a little bit more in the pre-show match. I wish there had been, like, the pre-show match felt like it was a little kind of like, eh, you know?
All right.
For me, like, I wanted to see sort of a moment where it's like, you know, MJF goes for a tag and Adam Cole gets, like, pulled off of the apron, but maybe didn't try too hard to not get pulled off the apron, like, leaves him in there a little bit, sort of. So I wish they had sown a little bit more seeds in that.
Or, like, Milk said he twisted an ankle or something like that. Like, just kind of like,
Adam Cole like twists an ankle and has to leave the match, and MJF gets beat down for the whole match. And then when they have their thing, it's like, oh, I actually didn't hurt my ankle, and now you just worked a whole match. Like, I wish they had a little bit more scheming in there.
Yeah, that's
but fair. It's good. I like that they're still friends. You know, very nice.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. The biggest swerve of all was that they remained friends.
Yeah.
My name is Lauren. I'm a regular darling.
Woo!
Thank you, all my fans. I'm going to be boring, but I did just review the cards, and I do think All In was my favorite between the two shows for the same reasons Josh was saying, with the pageantry and everything, and just very well-rounded, I guess. And I like shows where they build stories going into the show, and All Out was kind of missing out on that. It didn't have built-in stories that were like feuds leading, like storylines leading up to the matches necessarily. Totally. Not for all of them.
Yeah.
My standout is going to be, it's pre-show, but I really liked Hook versus Jack Perry a lot.
That, is it because of the implications? The implications of that match you really liked?
Lauren's like, the match wasn't that good, but it got rid of CM Punk. So
no! I am thrilled like, he's gone, yeah, but like, yeah. No, that you're I like, really like that match.
If there was a pre-show match on All Out that got FTR fired, he would have been over.
Lauren, why?
It was just a good match, you guys.
It was a good match.
I am going to do my usual little honorable mention to the coffin match with Joker Sting.
He can't keep getting away with this. What the fuck? How does Sting have like a fucking excellent match every pay-per-view?
It's so wild to compare it to his like WWE run. And like the run he's having in AEW, and it's like, and he's like what, like 5 or 8 years older than he was at WWE. Like, what are you doing, man? Now in retrospect, it's like, yeah, put him in a match with a fucking Undertaker because that would have fucking slapped. Anyway,
I am your heel host. I'm nobody's darling. I'm Campbell Falconer.
Boo.
Hold for booze. And contrarian that I am, I gotta go with All Out.
Of course.
And I don't know if it's recency bias or if it's there's a few things for me is that I think I agree that the like pomp and circumstance and the hype and the spectacle of All In was bigger, but I think that for me the match quality between like Mox and Orange Cassidy and that fucking Danielson Ricky Stark strap match. Just some like unbelievable like actual matches on that card. And I liked All Out for it's All In was a great like everything leading up to it and a culmination, and whereas All Out was like the thing that I liked the most about All Out was the implications going forward. Mm-hmm. That there's so much to be excited about and so much like intrigue coming out of All Out in a way that coming out of All In there wasn't really. Like that was a fucking masterclass in elevating Hobbs, even though he lost to me, elevating Ricky Starks, even though he lost to Danielson, elevating Orange Cassidy, even though he lost to Moxley, like really making a lot of your like homegrown guys look fucking great, you know?
Absolutely. And like the, you know, I don't think there's a wrong answer between the two. I think, you know, I think All Out, again, just wildly exceeded expectations. And again, that main event with like Orange Cassidy with that gutsy performance and like the
Blood Orange Cassidy.
Blood Orange Cassidy, very nice. Double birds in the corner and Moxley like killing him with a Death Rider. It was so good. It was so good. Everybody looked like a million bucks coming out of that.
Yeah.
I want them to do like a Stone Cold parody shirt of like blood from an orange.
And oh, it's just my like God. Stone Cold,
like bleeding. 100%. Bleeding.
That's like so Stone cool. Cold. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, it was dope. Like it was a phenomenal week of wrestling. Like a calendar 7 days that were just kind of unbeatable there.
We're spoiled. We're living in the best wrestling timeline right now.
And we're getting it all again next year. I can't wait. You know. Today we're talking about Josh, you want to take us through this one? We're talking about the Bola.
Bola these nuts.
Oh, got him.
So we're doing Bola. So PWG yearly puts on Battle of Los Angeles, and it's a tournament format. So it's a single round and then it's over two nights, and they have a bunch of the best way to describe it, kind of a little bit like your G1, except it's not like points. It's, again, it's more like round robin, I think, tournament style. And then they do like kind of like all like the first round matches night one. They do some spectacle matches night two, where like, you know, some of the eliminated people, they do some stuff like that. So again, kind of similar to the G1, but it's all for the the Champions Trophy at the end, and I have no idea what it gets you or what the the ramifications of getting the trophy, but I'm pretty sure it's just more for pride. It's for pride and honor, the event. But
I think on the commentary they were saying you get a shot at a title of your choice, and that usually they go after the world title, but sometimes they'll choose to go after the tag.
Gotcha. Yeah, and like a lot of people have won this that you probably know. El Generico, Sami Zayn has won in the past. Garcia's won it in the past. You know, there's a lot of very popular winners that have come out of that. So this year, I guess we'll see what happens. But
Has Tom Morello ever participated in the Battle of Los Angeles?
What? Yeah, from Rage, right? I think he's... what would be his move? Some kind of wacky fan guitar trick that he does. I don't know how that translates to wrestling.
Yeah. Do you think they did they name it after the Rage Against the Machine album, or did they name it against the World War II Air Raid?
You know, I'm going to say that Rage Against the Machine named that album after this tournament.
Yeah, that's how good the tournament is.
That's my guess on it.
So yeah, we're doing kind of our G1 treatment where we've picked like six matches, because it's a two night event and you don't want to hear us talking for, you know, that long. How long could your commute to work possibly be? So we're just picking like three matches from night one, three matches from night two. I watched almost the whole thing anyway, so I might pepper in a little bit of some extra little commentary. I had to skip some of night two to watch everything in time. But we kick it off with the third match of night one. We're talking about Jonathan Gresham versus Jordan Grace. And my understanding is that this is not an actual match in the tournament. This is just sort of a fun little exhibition between husband and wife.
Mm-hmm. So maybe you guys can speak to this a little bit better. I mean, like, you two are... engaged to be married. How did you feel watching this?
I thought it was very cute.
Cute is the first thing that I have written down. It was cute.
Yeah. It's fun.
Very sweet. It gets a little weird when Jonathan Gresham starts getting a little nasty with it. But
when he starts doing the finger submission stuff.
Yeah. When he starts trying to hurt her, it's like, oh, all right. But I guess... I don't know. If you look at it in the sense of like they're both like professional wrestlers and they do this for a living, and he has like a lot of respect for her as a wrestler, it's kind of like, okay.
And they're built exactly the same.
They are built exactly the same.
Except she is bigger than him. Like
her arms are bigger. Yeah.
Visibly stronger than he is.
have you seen Jordan Grace like recently?
Yeah. It's insane. Like,
She's
like, I guess she's competing in I guess bodybuilding competitions now as well. Mm-hmm. Like, she's in insane shape. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's sick.
Just eat clean and sleep 8 hours a night. Definitely nothing else, right?
I'm not going to speculate, but I've been eating clean over the last month or so, and I lift weights around the house. I don't even look close to that. I don't know how many years that would take me. Old Josh Pryor, I'll probably be well in the grave before I look anywhere close to that.
It was wild to me watching this and being like, oh, this was like 8 months ago. Like,
yeah,
an insane transformation. And I mean, like, hopefully she does well in the bodybuilding stuff and like stoked for her, but it's kind of like when The Rock went from like, you remember seeing like The Rock in WrestleMania versus The Rock in Pain and Gain, which like came out that year.
Gigantic.
And you're like, there's no fucking healthy way to go through that much of a transformation in that like amount of time. I don't know. People gotta look after themselves.
Yeah, again, like, and not to speculate, but like, you know, I think she's like independently a millionaire. She's just doing the things she's loving, right? Like she re-signed a thing with Impact. She's doing bodybuilding, yada, yada, yada. I mean, good for her. All the more power. She looked like $1 million here, I thought. But now she looks like a bajillion dollars. And like, I don't know, man. Bless your heart.
But yeah, the match is good. I like that they kind of tell this story of they're both similar builds and similar wrestling backgrounds. But like, Gresham has a little bit more of the like mat based grappling submission, whereas like Jordan can do a little bit more of the like power moves. And she's almost doing a little bit more like not necessarily high flying, but like she's doing some dives, she's doing some crossed bodies, etc. There's the spot where she goes for like a tope to the floor, and Gresham like catches her in a sleeper hold.
This was a great spot. This was a great spot.
It's so much fun. And it's like I think because when we started watching wrestling, we got into wrestling a lot through Lucha Underground. Yeah. And I think because of that, I'm very pro intergender wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like nice to watch stuff like this where it's not treated as a goof the way that like when John Morrison and Taya Valkyrie had their like fucking kitchen sink loser does the dishes match. It was kind of a bit. Or it's not like, oh, this is horrible. How could he be like Jonathan Gresham is definitely playing the heel in this match, but it's not such an over the top heel that they're playing too much on the gender thing. It's like everybody is just treated as a competitor. Well, yeah, very clearly in the same way.
Yeah, I truly don't get why there's so much like, you know, and it sounds like, you know, it's a bunch of Jim Cornette fans that really have the issue with it. But like intergender wrestling, easy for you to say. I think it's fun because we all like agree to the conceit that we're watching a predetermined thing and we're just watching two people that are really good at a craft do their thing. Yeah. Right. And I think, you know, through, who am I thinking of? She's wrestling tonight. Slamovich, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Between her, Jordan Grace, there's a ton of women wrestlers that are definitely, if not beyond the skill level of, you know, their male counterparts doing this. And like, it shows, like, this match was both of them were keeping up. It was a good, fun, entertaining match. I really like the power slot, the power spots with, the full Nelson. And then like Jordan Grace was too powerful. And like, he kept on like getting his hands hurt because she was busting out of it. And then he tries to do the full Nelson, but he can't break out. You know, it was great. It was a fun spot. The sleeper spot to the outside too was a lot of fun. Where when he jumped out, he got her in a sleeper, and then the fan at ringside was lifting her arm to see if it was out. I thought that was so good. I thought this was a fun, cute match. The match itself was all right, but that had a lot of cute spots in it.
Yeah, they do a lot of like submissions towards, like, from halfway point to the end, it's like a lot of back and forth between submissions, which is never as interesting. But one of my favorite things was Jordan Grace does like a sick like diving kick to Gresham, who is on the outside, and she like goes, I think, through the bottom, like the second rope, and she holds on. Like, I think she just kicks him. And she holds on to the rope and just kind of hangs there and then gets
Did she skin the cat back in?
I don't think she skins the cat back in. She just gets back in. But she stays holding on, which is something I've just like never seen before, which seems like really obvious. People just dive through.
Yeah.
They never hang on.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a cool like swing out of the rope type thing. But
hell yeah.
There is a spot in the match where she skins the cat, and it's like the most casual I've ever seen anyone do it in a wrestling context. I was like, my god, you gotta be
so
kidding.
Fucking strong, dude.
And I like that it's, to your point about like strength versus submission, I do appreciate a little bit of story beat in there where it's like the way that she wins is like she's strength the whole time and he's submission, and then the way that she wins is by flipping the script and she like turns the tables on him and puts him in a submission
totally
to win. Is like a very fun button on a fun match,
and he taps quick too.
Totally, he sells for her.
Yeah, it's cool, and they're just like so smiley throughout.
Yeah,
it's nice.
They're having a great time. They're having a great time. They're in love. They're married. They're doing a match. It's fantastic. Feel good.
Jordan Grace wins. How many bald heads you give it?
I gave it 3 1/3. Thought it was a fun match. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't think it was anything exceptional as far as the match goes, but it was a cute watch, you know?
Yeah. No, very sweet. Next up, we are watching Shun Skywalker versus Aramis.
They were very specifically saying Aramis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Excalibur has his pronunciations that he likes to hit really hard, you know?
That's just to let you know. Maybe he was messing with me the whole time.
Yeah.
I refuse to say Commander. I don't think that's the guy's name.
No, it's Commander.
Yeah, but like every time he's on Rampage or whatever.
How are we supposed to trust the guy?
Commander. Like
Excalibur. Call a commander.
Call him Excalibur.
Yeah.
Excalibur. This Aramis, I think I've seen before. I don't know if he was on like an AEW Dark guy, or if we've watched him in AAA or somewhere. This is a guy that I've like seen before, kind
Me
of
too.
Familiar with. Shun Skywalker, I had never heard of before. The Japanese Jedi. This guy looks insane.
He looks sick. He has like an Orville Peck-esque like tiny muscle mask. Yeah.
It's a great call. That's a great call. Yeah. I had never heard of either of these guys before, if I'm being honest. So I was going into this match blind, and I guess like my expectation of the match wasn't exactly what the match turned out to be. I don't know what your guys' thoughts were, but it was like, it was fine. It was like a pretty good match, but Skywalker was leaning heavy into that heel shit. Heavy.
He's slapping Aramis's head.
Yeah, like give him the old head pat. And then he did like a long eye rake to get the match going. There was like, he was leaning into it heavy. But I mean, it was all right. Like this match was okay. I don't know what you guys thought about it.
I agree that the match was okay. I was initially just so swept away by how impressive Aramis is. Like he was just doing outstanding luchador shit. I was just like, Christ, this dude is moving beautifully. I wanted to call out one specific part. There's a part where Skywalker fakes a shooting star, and when Aramis puts his knees up, because he's on the ground, he puts his knees up, and then Skywalker like moves, like he uses it to go into a Boston Crab, I think.
Yeah.
It was cool.
I love this match for Shun Skywalker having such a clear answer to everything that Aramis is throwing out. And it's like he's like, it's either a thing where it's like he's either watched the tape, or it's because of his like his background in Lucha Libre, but also in Japanese strong style. Like, he wrestles a hybrid style, so he can counter things in ways that Aramis, who's a pure luchador, can't see coming. And it's a fun clash of styles. I don't think the match was anything fantastic. We kind of picked these matches ahead of time before watching them, just for we learned from our mistakes from when we covered the G1, and we wanted to just go like breadth of field, and we wanted to try and not cover the same guy twice and make sure that we got a little piece of everybody. So this was one where it was like, never heard of these guys, let's see what they got,
right?
And you know, like I think it was the Commander versus Latigo match that was on this night was like another, like that was maybe the best lucha match on the card. Was like,
I think I watched that too. Yeah,
that like we didn't really get to cover, and I was like kind of watching it. I was like, oh, maybe we should have talked about that instead of this. But I think there's still like merit in this. I do, and like I appreciate how stiff Shun Skywalker was. He was doing like lucha moves, but just finishing them. Like he was there were a couple of moves where he was just like putting the boots to Aramis, who like Shun Skywalker was like, I think he does like a shooting star press but lands with a double knees instead of and it was just like, or maybe it was a moonsault and lands with a double knees, but just like some really really tough stuff.
I really liked Skywalker as a heel. I thought he did a great job, and I like my heels being a little smart. You know, like just like outsmarted the match, and you brought up a few good things there that he did. I think, this was fine. I think like just as an introduction match, it's good. Didn't blow my socks off my feet, but I gave this. We'll say that Skywalker won with the old SSW. It's called.
Yep. Oh, I said Spinny Slam.
That's maybe what it stands for, Spinny Slam. Whirly bird.
Wow.
Work. Wow.
I gave it 3.25. I gave it 3.25 ball then. I thought it was
all right.
little bit better than serviceable.
I also want to show Aramis had like a really cool, he had this like weird arm bar submission where he like crossed the arms first.
Yeah.
And sort of came over.
And Excalibur was like, oh, that's a true cross arm bar.
Cross arm breaker.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, it's not. I like that was like one time where I was like, where's Taz? Because Taz would know the name of that, you know? Like, oh, yeah, that's the Juji Katamo. Like,
never see that used too much, but, you know, that's the Fujibara armbar.
That's a good Taz.
Thanks.
Right on. And we're jumping forward to the main event of night one. We're talking about a triple threat luchador match between Vikingo, Black Taurus, and Bandido.
Woo!
This is what we all signed up for, right?
Come on now.
This match was so fucking good.
Yeah. Come on
now.
Oh
my God.
What are we doing here?
It was so hard to take notes for this one. Like, I somehow managed to take a lot of notes, but I'm sure it's just about their moves. But, like, it was so sick the whole time. And every time I looked down, I knew I was missing something, and which just, like, really upset me. And But I didn't want to pause it because I was on, like, a time crunch.
Yeah.
Why aren't more people doing fucking crucifix bombs, man? Like, that...
It was so cool.
Why aren't more people giving Black Taurus $1 million?
Right?
Is he like really expensive or something?
No, I just think he's worth whatever they were paying CM Punk, they should give to all three of these guys. Yeah. Just split that evenly.
Okay,
Taurus is so sick because he like is fantastic. Like, he's an incredibly powerful guy, but he can do some really sick moves. Like, he moves around really well.
And he's, I don't want to say that he is wasted on Impact just by virtue of him being on Impact, because I think that's doing a disservice to a very good promotion. I do think that he is wasted on Impact by virtue of being partnered with fucking Crazy Steve as part of, like, the Decay. Like, this stable that he's in on that show, fucking, and I haven't been watching Impact in a little while, so maybe he's having a big breakout run that I've been missing.
Right.
But, like, when I tuned out of Impact was definitely because I was like, they got a lot of talent that they're not doing fucking shit with. Why is Steve Macklin in the main event? Like, why is, like, Black Taurus is a star, dude.
I want to see Black Taurus versus Orange Cassidy. I want to see him versus fucking Samoa Joe. I want to see it all. Give it to me all. Because that's like, that's money.
Black Taurus versus Brody King. That's all I want.
Yeah. Like, yeah. That also fucking rules. Guess what? Every one of those matchups would fucking rule.
Yeah.
Tony Khan has this problem with, like, this match is so emblematic of, like, a really big issue that I have with Tony Khan, where he has, like, shiny new toy syndrome.
Mm.
Sure.
Where I feel like every couple of months we get, like, he discovers a luchador, right? Because, like, Bandido had that match with Jericho last year.
Yeah.
And then we were getting Bandido on Dynamite all the fucking time.
Yeah.
And then he was like, oh, I just found out about this new guy, Commander. And then we got, like, 7 weeks of Commander doing his, like, walk the tight ropes and jump off that we still, like, he got signed to a contract. We get to see him do it every battle royale.
Mm-hmm.
And then Vikingo Jr. popped, like, went viral for, he did, like, a spot in GCW that people were like, oh, that's crazy. Tony Khan brings him in. He has, like, a month's worth of matches. And where the fuck is he now? And it's, like, same thing happened with Rush. Same thing happened with Andrade.
But, like, there's it's not just that. Like, some of those you're 100% correct. And I truly feel that he'll get somebody to get excited about that. But I feel like maybe 50 to 60% of those, maybe there's some contractual things that aren't working out. Maybe it's availability. Like, it could be a lot of things, right?
Sure.
Just in fairness.
It's the pattern that I see, though, is that it is.
I'm with you.
They are within weeks replaced by the new shiny luchador.
Totally.
Like, it's like there is
I totally agree.
There's
with
an
you.
Archetype that he just plugs in.
It's like we have to fulfill this this thing.
Instead of
we have to check this box.
Instead of letting Penta Oscuro go on the fucking Monster Heel singles run that he should be going on.
Yeah.
I think that's coming. I feel like that is coming. I feel like you got to break up the Lucha Bros at some point, because I think both of them, like, I feel like Phoenix could have like a great singles run, but I feel like Penta,
Phoenix
like,
is incredible.
Incredible. But I feel like Penta, like in the main event scene, I think there's a lot of like meat on the bone as far as like, even like you make him serious and you like feud him with MJF next or something, right? There's something.
I want him
there.
To break some people's arms.
Right.
Have Pentagon turn heel. Right. Have Pentagon turn heel by breaking Alex Abrahantes' arm.
Right.
Saying that he doesn't need a mouthpiece. Have him come out, only cut promos in Spanish, and beat the shit out of everybody on the roster.
Amazing.
Main event material in 2 weeks. Like, yeah. I 100%. Guarantee you.
Yeah.
But let's, like, this match fucking rocks. These guys have great chemistry together. Lauren, do you want to start calling out some spots?
Yeah. So, first of all, my first spot. Actually, maybe I should save this. Maybe I should save this for my high spot. Yeah, I'm going to save it for my high spot. So, never mind.
There's
but,
chance
okay,
somebody
my
else
first...
to bring it up.
So no, you won't. No
I
one's going to bring
this
up. I have
written down for this match.
Okay.
What I was going to bring up is in the spot.
I was trying so hard not to take notes and just watch the match, but I just have two spots, but...
No, no. Go with one of yours, and then I'll jump in with one of mine.
So my first one is the second rope elevated, like delayed suplex that Bandido does.
Yeah,
is like the core strength on that guy is just buck wild.
He's so cool, and he's so charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, and he's wearing a mask.
Yeah,
how can he be charismatic in a mask?
Speaking of Orville Peck,
he was orchestrating. Yeah, he was orchestrating the crowd the whole time. He was like, "You get your pop, you get your pop. I'll get my pop." Gives a dollar to each one of the guys that got thrown into the... Come
that
on.
Was sick. That was sick. I love that he was like distributing the money. It was awesome.
That was great.
And then the other note that I have is typical convoluted lucha chair spot. Never mind. That was totally worth it.
That was insane. That chair spot was wild. So what happens is they like set up a bunch of chairs and then they like leave them for a while. And then they Black Taurus sets. What happens? He tries to set up Vikingo for a power slam and onto the chairs, and then fucking Bandido like runs, like, or is it the other way?
Yeah,
I think it was a suplex or something. And but like
no,
you
it
got
power, Black Taurus had Vikingo Jr. up for a power bomb,
right?
Power bomb,
and then
bomb, yeah.
as he's power bombing him, Bandido comes over the ropes and like spears.
Vikingo down
and blows out all the chairs
and
it
blows
was
out
fucking
all the chairs.
Incredible.
It was completely worth all of the setup. It was so fucking cool.
Yeah. Cool. And they each get like moments to like really showcase themselves.
Absolutely,
some of them get more than that, but they'll, you know how they'll have, they'll do this in like typical lucha matches where they'll have like a section where it'll be like, this is the Bandido section where he's going to do a ton of moves all in a row, and they're all going to be incredible, like never ever seen before moves. And then they'll do it for Black Taurus, and then they'll do it for Vikingo. Like it's I love that shit.
It was awesome. And like the Vikingo stuff too was like so cool. Like near the beginning of the match, there was a spot where like both the guys were in the ring, and then he stands on the ring post, jumps on the top rope like more than halfway across the ring, and then does this wild backflip, and then 2 seconds later he's getting launched over the corner turnbuckle way over the post, and then and fucking
to the outside, and then he does a Hurricane Rana to Black Taurus outside.
Fucking
instead
insane.
Of landing on the ground, he does a Hurricane Rana.
It's fucking insane. It was nuts.
This earlier when I said Commander versus Latigo was the best lucha match, I meant like singles one-on-one.
Okay.
Like, because obviously this is...
Yeah, this one's the best.
I realize I need to put a little asterisk on that.
There's a double crucifix by Black Taurus, which is sick.
Yeah.
100%. And again, that looks so cool. Like, and he does it a couple times. Like, he's involved with that spot. And every time it looks like $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The last spot that I have to shout out is Bandido lifting Vikingo upside down on the top turnbuckle, and then they fall backwards to the floor onto Black Taurus, who is supposed to break their fall supposedly from the top, the air above the top turnbuckle.
Yeah. It's great. This match fucking rocked. I don't even remember who won.
Bandido. Bandido won.
Bandido wins, which good for him, man. That guy, I like. If they just gave me like a little like hour long lucha show as part of AEW with all of the luchadors that Tony's collected, I would be fine with that.
Turn that Rampage. Like, yeah, just Rampage.
Yeah, just make it El Rampage. Rampage. How many bald heads do you give this, Josh?
It's got a solid 4 for me, man. It was
there's no question
in my mind after I was done that. I was like, I felt good, like I was like a little tingly, and I was like, oh, I just watched a really fun pro wrestling match. I don't know. Everybody should go out of their way to check that match out. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Jumping over to night 2, we're starting with Brian Keith versus Masha Slamovich. Easily, I don't think this is even debatable. 2 best entrance skiers of the night, right?
Fantastic. Both of these guys look like $1 million. Lauren, I'm going to turn it over to you for the gear section of this podcast, but what do you think?
I did not notice what Brian Keith had as his entrance gear.
He was kind of dressed like Clint Eastwood in like the Man with No Name trilogy. He's got like the big hat and the poncho.
I saw that. Yeah. I think I saw it in an earlier match.
He had a match on night 1 against SB Kato, and they kicked the shit out of each other.
Yeah. So he's got that poncho thing. Yeah, that's sick. He's like a evil Hangman Adam Page. And
he just had a match against Hangman on
Rampage.
It was on Rampage, right?
Right. Yeah. Masha comes in with like that sick mask and like the billowy tulle robe thing.
I can't believe how well Masha Slamovich has like rehabbed her, because I remember when she debuted for Impact and she was doing like a very throwback classic like foreign heel Alison Brie in Glow Russian gimmick, and this was like right around the time that like Ukraine kicked off,
so they said, okay, maybe we're not gonna do this right now. I think maybe it's time to retire this gimmick.
I think the problem was Impact as pre-tapes.
Oh, shit.
And they had like fucking 6 weeks of, because I remember I was watching Impact and I was like, I can't believe they're still running with this gimmick right now. And like, you know, because I had a really, really bad first impression of her when I saw her show up on Impact around that time. How she was presenting herself. And I was like, this is in poor taste. And I don't know what the story was, and like I don't know exactly when they changed it, but when I remember when we went to GCW in Toronto and they announced, they were like, oh yeah, the main event's gonna be Masha Slamovich versus Mike Bailey. I was like, I guess whatever. And she fucking,
that match,
she blew the roof off the Opera House when we were there, man.
Like, it was so sick.
That was such a fucking good match. And like, yeah, I you know, and I'll be honest, I didn't really know her before that match. Like, I hadn't seen anything from her, and that was my first impression. I was like, well, everything that she's gonna be in is gonna fucking slap. So I mean, this match, I feel like, was no exception. This match was very good.
Yeah She is the character that Marina Shafir thinks she is.
Wow. Shots, you know what I mean? Shots fired.
But Shafir just got astray. Like, she fucking but I mean, like, she wrestles the style that Marina Shafir would like to wrestle in AEW, but I think just isn't smooth enough to do. But everything she does, like, looks legit. Like, she's laying those kicks in there, and her like submissions look great, and her suplexes look great. She's tough. She's like wholly and completely believable. I think if you dropped her into the AEW women's division, she would fucking eat them alive.
Except for Taya.
I obviously, like, there are exceptions, but like, I do think that after whatever Impact contract she's on is up, she's gonna be one of the big two bound for sure. Like,
yeah,
no doubt.
I think she's
gonna get.
I would love
up.
To think that WWE could do something with her, but I don't know, because she's like, a little bit more rough around the edges. And I don't mean that in like bad at wrestling or unpolished wrestler, but I mean like kind of like that Jon Moxley a little bit. You know, she's got that dog in her. And I think like AEW, if they could do it right, I feel like you got like a real heavy hitter that again has like some serious Jon Moxley vibes that could probably, you know, fuck shit up. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the problem with her going to WWE, and as much as I think that WWE books their women's division, it's like outside of, and here's the other thing, actually, is that I think Impact might be the best booked women's division in terms of like weekly TV. And like, if she wanted to just stay in the Knockouts and just keep like fucking killing it there, I wouldn't be surprised either. But like, WWE does a good job of like showcasing their women's division and highlighting their women's division and booking their women's division, but like, they still are kind of like, they're all hot. They're all traditionally fucking babes. And like, Masha Slamovich is fucking great, but she does not fit that silhouette. She does not fit that mold of what you need to be at the top of the card in WWE as a woman.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big issue that they have, where like AEW isn't booking their division quite as well, but you still have like someone like Willow Nightingale getting big TV time, you know? And like, she does not look like, I guess Piper Niven is in WWE right now, but it's like, I still see WWE as being a little stuck in the past in that regard. And it's to your point where it's like attitude wise and image wise, I don't know if Masha Slamovich fits in that mold.
It's tough. It's tough. And like, Trish and Becky just had a really good match on a pay-per-view. It was gritty. It was
totally,
you know, like a fantastic, I would say probably match of the night of that night. So they've got kind of the wrestling style, but I feel like Slamovich is again like a little bit more gritty, and she's a little bit more, you know, like, I don't know if it totally fits. And I'd wish that she would go over to like, again, like, and again, like, she could be totally content in Impact and, you know, Godspeed, but for a bigger platform, I think AEW, if they did the right thing by her, I think would be perfect. It would, again, like, if you market her correct and you give her the opportunity and the airtime and the matches, I think she could elevate the whole division. I think now is the time for a Slamovich on a show like that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I agree for sure. I don't think that they need any specific woman to elevate their division on AEW. I think they just need better writing and better time. Like, they have several really fantastic women that they just don't utilize. So,
yeah.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Yeah. Tony Khan, get your shit together.
I liked Brian Keith as well. Yeah. I liked Brian Keith as well. This was a guy, he was of all of the sort of like unknown quantities on this show, for me going into it, he's the one that I remember the most and that kind of stood out to me the most. You know, more than like Shun Skywalker or Aramis or SP Kato or even like Michael Oku, who's a guy that I've like heard about before, but I watched, you know, his first round match against Takeshita, and like, he didn't really stand out to me the way that like Brian Keith has kind of a vibe and like a look, and that like, and he like, he hits hard, man. He go, like, these two fucking tear each other apart in this match.
They're both kind of known for striking.
Yeah.
And they do not disappoint.
They both fucking strike the shit out of each other. Shit out of each other this match.
Yeah.
It was so good, because it's like, it was a tale of like Brian Keith like not fully respecting her at first, and then by the end of it, it's like, what do I have to do to put her away? And I really like the storytelling of this match.
And who better to tell a story like that than Eddie King?
Oh, yeah!
He was so good. It was, my notes are so funny, because I missed like who was joining commentary. I heard Excalibur saying, I guess this person's joining me on commentary, but I didn't hear who it was. And then I just started hearing him talking, and I was like, Is that fucking Eddie Kingston on commentary?
It sounded like it wasn't planned, and also kind of sounded like they didn't have a second microphone to give him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was quieter.
Like, he was quiet. It was like Excalibur literally sounded like, when he said, "I guess Eddie Kingston is joining me on commentary," it was a thing where it was like, Eddie Kingston just decided he wanted to walk out and, like, talk about how cool Maja Slamovich is, and nobody said no.
He did a really good job on commentary, to be honest. Totally. Like, he was really putting over a lot of story and tying it into, like, the matches from the previous night, mm-hmm. and, like, I was like, Eddie Kingston, you're kind of doing a really good job.
And it was so funny, he was just, like, calling the next spot. He's like, oh, yeah, she's got to headbutt him. Yeah, she headbutted him. Yeah. Oh, she... I go for the tiger driver off the top turnbuckle. Yep, that's what he's doing. And he got just like called the next spot. He was like super hilarious, and like you could tell like Excalibur like really appreciated like the levity of like Eddie Kingston being there, because like I'm sure it's exhausting calling two nights of action on your own, but like a random wild Eddie Kingston showing up is pretty cool.
He's such a student of the game, yeah. You know, like he just loves good matches like this.
Yeah.
It's good. Brian Keith gets his, like, he gets busted open, but like, it's like his lip and he's like bleeding from the mouth and he's all crazy eyed and like,
yeah,
it's
good. Fun match.
He does this like brutal clothesline or lariat. I wrote both because I don't know what the fuck.
If you're in Japan, I think it's a lariat, and if you're in North America, it's usually a clothesline.
I always thought it was a clothesline as if I'm standing still and you're coming towards me, it's a clothesline, but if you're standing still and I'm moving towards you, it's a lariat.
So I would the only argument I have for that is that Stan Hansen, so JBL's clothesline from hell is mm-hmm. based off Stan Hansen's lariat, and it was like lariato, right. Like, or whatever they say in Japan for it, and they would always stand still, or a lot of the times they would stand still for that big lariat. So I think it's I think it's splitting hairs, and I think it's the same thing, but just depending on where you are, they call it maybe something different, or who's your announcer.
Right,
the more you know.
That's based on my experience. I could be wrong.
And the win comes out of this really insane move that I don't know what to call it. I just said incredible flippy thing where Maja like rolls up in a ball and she like rolls up the front of Brian Keith and then she rolls down the back of Brian Keith in a ball. It was so
better than
wild
I can describe
while he's
it.
Like standing.
I don't know.
It was so sick. She looked like Sonic the Hedgehog, but then he like hits her and like with a knee strike, and
that knee was fucked.
Yeah,
that looked like it took her head clean off.
Yeah.
Like, Brian Keith wins. A shame to not see Maja Slamovich go further, but it was like, this was such an impactful showing for me, because I watched this like right before, like when he showed up on Rampage, I was like, oh, this is gonna be good, like him versus Hangman. I got hyped for that match on Rampage because I had already watched this and I was like, damn, this guy's sick. This is a great showing for him.
Yeah,
I really like this match. I gave it 3 2/3 bald heads. I thought it was a pretty good, hard-hitting, exceptionally fun match.
Hell yeah. We got our co-main event, our penultimate match of the evening. We have a 10-man tag between the Jericho Appreciation Society.
And a random assortment of...
And
just... There's a lot grab of like, bag, you know. It's like
it's like I was trying to figure out if this is like team guys who have worked for PWG but also kind of work for Tony Khan, right? Like, because like Kevin Blackwood was like a Dark Elevation mainstay, Evil Uno obviously, Jonathan Gresham. Although I guess he and Tony Khan had a big falling out, right?
Cup of coffee.
Maybe that's where this kind
of. I don't
know. Yeah. And then, yeah, I guess Michael, I don't know if Michael Oku's maybe been on Ring of Honor. And then I think SB Kento was just like, hey, if I'm going to fly over, I'm going to do two matches. Or like, I'm going to wrestle on both nights. But yeah, that's a sorry. So you got Kevin Blackwood, Evil Uno, Jonathan Gresham, Mike Oku, and SB Kato versus the Jericho Kento? Appreciation Society. Kento, sorry.
Yeah.
We get there's like a little Daniel Garcia heel promo that kicks us off. He's like, I don't need to be here.
Yeah.
I'm a sports entertainer, which you love to see. You love your champion saying, I don't need to be here. That's great.
Well, originally it was supposed to be a 3-versus-3 match, right? So it was supposed to be Uno, I think Kevin and, oh wait, no, Uno and then two other guys. And then Daniel Garcia was supposed to team up with two guys. And he was like, I'm not teaming up with these guys. I only team up with sports entertainers. And then the Jericho's Appreciation Society came out. And then it became a 5-on-5 match, which I thought the setup was great because it was a nice surprise for the audience. Everybody was like, everybody's losing their mind. It was a fantastic setup. And,
Sorry, I totally missed
that. Oh, really?
That is great. Yeah, that went completely over my head.
I didn't get all of the intricacies of it. It's really, for whatever thing we downloaded, it was really hard to hear them talking in ring on the mic. But I got that he was supposed to be paired with other people, and then he brought out Jericho and the Appreciation Society as a complete surprise. And like the crowd had no fucking clue that Jericho would be
there. Which was awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, and the crowd was eating it up.
Yeah.
And like, Sammy Guevara is like the biggest heel of that group to this day.
Oh my god.
It was so beautiful, his heel work for this moment. So like their crowd is all excited. Yeah. The match begins. Jericho conducts the crowd he conducts their cheers as he's about to tag in. Like he raises his hand and they cheer, and then he like, you know, raises it, lowers it to like, you know, conduct their chanting to different like decibels and all this shit. And then he finally tags in, and then fucking Sammy Guevara does it, and everyone's like, boo, boo, boo. And then he tags in, and Jericho doesn't even get to fight before fucking Sammy tags himself in. It's the best. Awesome.
Jericho's reaching his hand up and everybody's cheering, and he's conducting them with cheers. And then when Guevara starts doing it, they switch to boos. So when his hand goes up, they boo louder, and when his hand goes down. And this was a very fun, you know that I'm the anti like chant guy. But this was a very cute moment of like the crowd interacting and elevating in a very like artificial way. But
I feel like
because it was organic. It was organically artificial, right?
Yeah.
I feel like PWG does a very good job with that, because it's like, this is like the concentrated wrestling mark, like the concentrate the most hardcore wrestling fans you're going to get at a PWG show. So like all the chants are great. Yeah. Like I feel like everybody in the ring got it. Everybody like was playing along. Jericho, you could tell he was reveling in it. Like Jericho's like, this is the best, you know. He did like the 1, 2, 3, like the punches in the corner, and he did like the number 8, the Ocho one. Everybody got it right away. Yeah. It was really well done, and I think everybody had a lot of fun with this match.
Totally.
That being said, with the
I know where this is going.
Marquee fans and like going along and playing along, how do we feel about the slow-mo segment?
Because the slow-mo segment is like a classic PWG thing before, right?
And I feel like Jericho wanted to do this.
That's what it read as, right? It was like Jericho was like, I will come and do this, but I want to be part of... Because if there's one thing that can be said about Jericho, it is he will attach himself to whatever is kind of like getting over, you know? He will just like glom onto it. And so it was... I felt like it was very poorly executed, but it was also just watching a 50-year-old man live his dreams. So.
Okay, because I didn't know that was a PWG thing, and so I was so fucking confused, and I was just like, I guess we're doing this, and it went on for so long. I was like,
went on for way too long.
Some of them were really good at it, and some of them were really bad at it.
Yeah.
It was really fun to watch the good ones, though.
It had its high spots and like low spots during the actual spot itself. Because like usually I'm like, this is a bit much for me. Like I have a threshold where I'm like, I'm having fun,
yeah,
or this is kind of stupid. And it's like, it I feel like it walked that line the entire yeah.
I wasn't super into it, to be honest, but I think it's like, it's fine. It didn't ruin anything for me, but
there's something about like a lot of those like comedy spots and like bit spots that I think people associate with being like PWG classics really come from the Young Bucks, Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa kind of like era, where it's a thing where it's like it was innovative then, and it was also pointedly and directly taking shots at other things happening in wrestling.
Yeah.
Like the one thing that always comes to mind for me was when Randy Orton made that tweet about how every indie wrestling match is the same. He was like grapple, handshake, dive, something, something, dive. Then you do a dive. Then you do a dive. And the next weekend at a PWG show, they had like a 6-man tag match where every single person in that match hit an RKO like 7 times.
That's awesome. You know what I mean? That's so awesome.
Like there were clips of a segment where they were hitting, like someone was on someone's shoulders and someone would RKO the guy off of their shoulders. Like they were just, it was like, and so that's kind of a thing where it's like doing the slow-mo spots or doing the like make-believe hand grenade spots or doing the force choke slam spots, like things like that I associate with sort of the comedy of PWG is a thing where it's like when someone like Chris Jericho wants to do it, it's like, no, you like, it doesn't work because that spot is making fun of Chris Jericho. It's that spot is so pointedly against the established wrestling history and the established wrestling elite. And it's great that Jericho is somebody who's been around for as long as he has been and can see the inherent value in that type of wrestling and wants to embrace it and wants to participate in it. And that's like that's why he is still wrestling and Jim Cornette just has a podcast.
Well, yeah,
is because he gets it, but it still doesn't translate when he does it because he's not.
I don't know. I don't know if I fully agree with you. And I'll say this. I think Chris Jericho, as much shit as he gets, I feel like he does a great job of elevating certain things that he can understand what the value is to wrestling. So with Orange Cassidy, he was the first person to really kind of like grab on and like do a full like feud with Orange Cassidy. And sometimes it's a little,
totally,
it goes on a little long, and like maybe Chris Jericho will come out looking like, again, like it gets dragged out a little bit. I feel like Jericho maybe gets a little bit more of the benefit, but he does, like, you can tell he like cares and wants to do the work for the next generation, if that makes sense. And I feel like, again, like maybe a little self-serving, but at the same time, ultimately good. And if Chris Jericho can get on for something like this, which is like so absurdly not Chris Jericho, I think there's some, I don't know, there's something to it. There's something there that, I just don't want to take a giant shit on Chris Jericho because it's like, I see it.
But
it's like, it's kind of like, I appreciate it as well.
It's to me like Chris Jericho showing up to PWG in 2023, sure, and doing the slow-mo spot. It's a thing. It's like if like Guns N' Roses were in Toronto last weekend, right? And it's like, it would have been like if Guns N' Roses showed up to like an underground hardcore show and they were like, hey, we're gonna play a song for you guys. And it's a thing where it's like, man, Guns N' Roses, it's really cool that you're here, but like you're kind of missing the point. This isn't really, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
my thing is, I was going to like sort of redirect it a little bit. Like, I don't think it's about Chris Jericho that makes it feel weird for me. For me, it's that the rest of the card and the rest of the promotion, as far as I could see, I don't know this history with PWG, but everything else I saw this night and the night before was serious like very intense. And so for me, it was just like, it just took me completely by surprise. Yeah. Whereas like, I think about like when I went to, like I had been going to Superkicked live shows in Toronto, which are like more just like adults. Like there's some silly stuff that happens, but it's very much like a more straightforward wrestling show. And then I went to Greektown, where the entire fucking show, like almost every single match on that show had a weird fucking slapstick bullshit magic shit happening, or like comedy or something. It was just like every single one had that, and they would be like amazing wrestlers doing it, and mm-hmm. then there would be some wrestlers who are pure comedy and not really wrestling at all and just doing weird shit.
Yeah,
but like it made sense because I was like, oh, I get it, the right. like this entire promotion is this theme,
right?
Whereas when you just like throw yeah. a random bit of like slow-mo or like magic mm-hmm. or something into like a fucking Chris Jericho like and Daniel Garcia, like just a really generally serious show.
Yeah,
I will say all of Jericho Appreciation Society is pretty silly in general, mm-hmm. but like I don't know, ultimately they are wrestling to win matches, and it's like it was yeah. the tonal shift that got me. Not that it was Chris Jericho.
Like it's tough if you do something so. This is why I like Broken Matt Hardy, Orange Cassidy for a time. There's a lot of things that kind of like, because like you're suspending your disbelief while you're watching wrestling, but then there becomes a point where it's like, well, this is just fucking dumb, right? But like, mm-hmm. but it's that big shifting of gears that you have to do mentally. To get yourself to be like, I'm having so much fun, and like this has been the pacing of the night, and this has been the pacing of the show, and this is the I guess the sandbox we're playing in. For something to come out of left field like a slow motion spot in a match, it's a little tough to swallow, right? And I think that was me watching it too, where I was like, I can have fun with this because I think Jericho Appreciation Society is so silly, and I know this exists in the PWG universe. But at the same time, there's even moments for me during it, again, like where I was walking the line, I was like, I think this is maybe too much. So, yeah. I feel you.
Did anyone catch a spot at the start of the match when Daniel Garcia finally gets back in the ring and starts squaring up, and he potatoes Jonathan Gresham so yeah. fucking hard?
No.
That Jonathan Gresham has to roll out of the ring, and then Evil Uno comes in and just cracks Daniel Garcia in the face. He gives him the hardest fucking receipt I've ever seen. Like, I didn't think the rest of the match was gonna happen when he hit him. Yeah. Like, that was
that's funny too, because that's an AEW guy giving a receipt to another AEW guy as opposed to one of the PWG
guys. But like Uno's also a wrestling trainer, right? So he probably sees something like this mm-hmm. and he's like, this guy probably has a receipt coming. And just to like, it's kind of like a more like a slow down shot. You know what I mean? Like,
But it was, because I was kind of shocked that the rest of the match happened, because that was the first, after you got like the Jericho like tag shit. And all of the sort of like bullshit that started, like literally the first move that happens is Daniel Garcia accidentally punching Jonathan Gresham square in the head so bad that he has to roll out of the ring. And then Evil Uno coming in and just doing the exact same thing. I was like, this could go. And then everybody collectively goes like, all right, we're good. We can be professionals now. Yeah. And they just do the rest of the match. And I was
the
like,
debt has been paid.
Like, that was crazy to watch in real. Because you hear about that shit happening. Right. But I've never noticed it that much. I've never seen it come to the forefront that much. Maybe Braun Strowman getting decked by Brock Lesnar in the Royal Rumble. That's the only other time that I can think of where it's been like that obvious.
I don't think Brock has the tact to like wait for a moment and get him back. Brock's probably just like super fucking pissed off at Braun, and he's like, slow down, man.
But man, like, yeah, props to Uno for just coming in for his boy.
He's like a good guy, this Uno.
I love him as a heel right now in like Ring of Honor and AEW. I really like the new heel Dark Order has been a lot of fun. Because they're not, when they started they were heels, but they were like spooky evil faction, and now they're just like kind of
bad people.
Yeah. John Silver calling people broke because they couldn't afford All In and All Out.
It's great.
We get Daniel Garcia hitting
Blackwood.
Blackwood with the bat and then the Judas effect. Was there anyone else in the match that you wanted to shout out for, like, because we didn't really talk about like Michael Oku or SB Kento or like those guys?
No,
like,
I didn't think Michael Oku really had a chance to stand out in this match at all. And it was something where, because like I didn't come across him in the like three or four matches of night one that I watched, he just didn't cross my path. So when he showed up in this match, I was like, who the fuck is this? I've never seen this guy before. And then I didn't really see much of him, so I was just kind of like, well, that's too bad, I guess.
Yeah.
Whereas like SB Kento got a bit more time to like do his thing. I would say Kevin Blackwood didn't super get showcased either.
That guy's so weird, because he's like, every time I see him wrestle, I'm like, this guy's very good at the wrestling portion of this in a very specifically like modern independent mixed style. Like, he can run the ropes, he can do the roll-ups, he can da 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 da. But there isn't really much that stands out about him to me. Like, he kind of, it's like he could kind of tag with Kip Sabian, you know, I think would be like a good fit for him.
Yeah.
But because he was working AEW for a while, and I know he used to work GCW for a bit too, but I think he also is just like a tattoo artist as his like main job, and wrestling was kind of just like a hobby thing.
Cool.
So maybe he just doesn't want to pursue it much more than, you know, like being like a Dark Elevation
guy. Wrestling's so like really like mercurial, like where it's like he's just like one good gimmick away from like figuring that out. But I feel like the same with Kip Sabian, right? Like, I think the height of Kip Sabian was like when he was wearing a paper bag over his head, but then that just kind of went away. And that,
I'll say.
Okay. But like, you know what I mean? But like, if you look at Sammy Guevara at the same time when he came in, he was wearing a panda head, and then he got indoctrinated into the Jericho Appreciation Society, and then it was off to the races. So I feel like all of those guys are just like one like gimmick or like and it's tough, and you see it, and like there's so many good people, like just based on this PWG card as a whole, like there's so many good wrestlers, but you know, it's like what's going to be your break, right?
Yeah, the Butcher, the Blade, and the Bunny, and the Kevin Blackwood.
Maybe take that back to the workshop, man.
Yeah, no.
3.5
3.5 There you go. We got a cute little Jericho promo afterwards. That was very, very sweet.
Yeah.
And then we got a goofy Sammy Guevara.
It's like, so you want to see me back?
Everybody boos.
A boo. Yeah. You want to see Jericho back?
Yeah. And then Jake Hager tells us that he likes his hat.
Yeah, that was funny.
And Daddy Magic tells us what makes his nipples hard. There was also a whole sequence in this match where Anna Jay gets involved with Evil Uno. She's like, no, Dark Order.
Yeah, she does the claw thing.
Yeah, remember, we love each other.
Yeah. Very good.
And
very
then,
fun.
What's her name?
Ty Conti.
Ty Mello hits him in the dick from behind. No. Yeah.
Heel
shit.
Real
issue. Very, very fun. Goofy match, you know?
Yeah, it was fun.
And we got our main event. This is the real shit. We got Speedball Mike Bailey versus Konosuke Takeshita. Speedball had to wrestle 4 matches in one night to get, and he looks like it. He looks like he got his ass beat. I think he might have ran up against Brian Keith in one of those matches, because like,
he sure did.
He looks rough.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was...
I can't imagine. 4 matches one night?
Yeah.
And Takeshita does 3, but yeah.
But I mean, both these guys are absolute studs. I mean, they're like going in there, doing what they did, and then like having the match that they did. Like, it wasn't anything that, you know, it's mind-blowing, but it was like a really fucking good match that these two guys had.
Yeah, I agree. It was like very good.
It's great, exactly, even. Yeah. It's exactly the match that you would expect Speedball Mike Bailey and
Takeshita
to have.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of, it's this is a match that is like, if you told me that this is going to be the main event of a Dynamite, I'd be like, oh, hell yeah. That's great. You know, like, very solid.
Very solid.
The other bit of like storytelling in here is like that it's Takeshita's first time in the bowl of and the bullet final. Whereas this is Mike Bailey's third time, and he's never won before. So he really wants to win.
Totally. And it's this is also coming off of sort of like the comeback year for Mike Bailey.
Right.
Or maybe this is like the beginning of the comeback year for Mike Bailey. Because he, you know, spoilers, I don't know, like... He cuts a promo at the end where he talks about how the last bola that he wrestled was 5 years before this, and that his like his he says my life changed. I got lucky, and what he's referring to is like I in like 2018 he went down to work the bola and he didn't have a work visa. Like he just told, like he just went down to the States, worked, and then they found out because it's like, yo, this got broadcast on like fucking the internet. And he got a 5 year ban from traveling for any reason to the States because he was working illegally, and he like took that 5 year ban and he went and worked in like DDT for a while, and he worked like a bunch of Canadian indie promotions and stuff, and this was like kind of because he missed like the golden era of like NXT 2019, you know, he missed the beginning of AEW, he missed like a lot of stuff where it's like this is a guy who like. Could be kind of on top of the wrestling world if he had been able to continue on the trajectory that he was on when he got that ban. Just in terms of like the style that he wrestles, how charismatic he is, the direction that companies were going in.
Do we know how old he is?
He could have really hit it big. I don't know off the top of my head.
Because he's built so much like goodwill and like honestly, like the, like this natural kind of like flow that he's built. Like I would say, like. It's a blessing and a curse, kind of like, you know, what he's getting to, where it's like, he's done so much in that 5 year span. And now that he's coming out, people are like, whoa, who the fuck is this guy? And he's incredible, right?
WrestleMania weekend, he was on like every show that I watched. Like he did the Impact New Japan show. He did the, WrestleCon Super Show. Right. He did like a couple of GCW shows. Like he was on Bloodsport and Joey Janela's, I think. And he stole the show, everything that he was on for all of WrestleMania weekend. Mm-hmm. And like he had a great showing in this. And it's like, it's awesome to see this dude finally get his due. And it's cool to see him, like he's an Impact where like the X Division is like the perfect place for him. But it's cool to see him here. Where he's saying that it's like, I got to travel, I got to go to Japan, I got to do this, and now I'm finally back here where I feel like I belong, where like I left off. And it's like, I like that PMA, the positive mental attitude of him not being like bitter about where he could be or like, you know, what he could be doing. It's really cool to see this guy come in and just like, he's such a bona fide baby face.
Yeah.
Speedball is like one of my favorite guys this year. Everything that I've seen him do has just been awesome.
Yeah, make totally.
A great TNT champion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just love to love him.
Mm-hmm.
He's 33.
33.
There you go.
Still a baby.
A spring
still
chicken. A baby. Yeah. Anything in the match that stood out? Like, obviously, these guys are both great. They can go, you know.
They're both great. They're both, like, faces, I guess. Like, they're both, like, very... much favorites, but like Takeshita ends up playing a bit more heely in this match. I don't know if he was presented as heely in the other matches of the card, but
he was definitely working face in the Michael Oku match that I watched. Not that Michael Oku was working heel, but it was more of a like two competitors. Nobody was like sort of being a dick, but this was definitely sort of like shades of the heel turn to come. And I think there was also a thing where like, didn't Don Callis show up to the Bola to try and be like, hey, Takeshita, come, you know, like they were already sort of like planting the seeds
I think he was like, he was outside of the ring and then like, you know, he's kind of like consoling him. And I don't know if he gave him a card or something. There was something that was happening. There was some fuckery that happened that got put on the internet there.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, Takeshita ends up doing a bit of some Healy stuff, but not too heinous. But he's like working Mike Bailey's arm and fingers, which were like previously worked on in an earlier match or something.
Oh, did either of you watch the Jordan Grace Mike Bailey match?
No.
He's got to be like double jointed or something.
Okay.
Because Jordan Grace in their match, she takes his pinky finger on his left hand and bends it all the way back so that it is touching the back of his hand. And then she undoes his wrist tape and ties his wrist tape around to hold his pinky finger back. And he just keeps it on for the whole match.
What are you doing?
It was gross. It was so fucked up.
No, that's not cool.
Everyone disliked that.
Watching that match is like, huh. It looked, his hand was like, and it was like, just from the tension of it, like his hand was turning purple. It looked like the paper mache hand from like Tai Chi's. Like, it was disgusting.
That sounds gross. Yeah.
So Takeshita working his hand in this match, definitely a heel move.
No, it was, again, the match itself was, again, exactly what you would expect out of these two. And again, like, both of them worked multiple matches this night. Speedball Mike Bailey wins the tournament. He gets the job done with the old flamingo driver. And I gave it 3 3/4 bald heads. I don't think it was
nice
the match of the tournament, but definitely a very good showing for both of these guys. And big things for both of them in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My two spots that I wanted to shout out from this match, the Mike Bailey, the lateral springboard moonsault where he goes off the second rope inside of the ring, does a backflip sideways to the outside of the ring. Like, what? And then I think, is it the turnbuckle brainbuster spot?
Brainbuster! Like, you gotta say it right.
You're like, Takeshita doesn't do anything too heely, except he tries to murder Mike Bailey in the ring.
Well, like, you know why he did that move, though, right? So, like, he had his first match with El Generico. He does the Blue Thunder Bomb. He does the Brain Busta, which was Generico's move, and then he does the kick in the corner. So, like, he does all of Generico's moves, and still in AEW, he still does them.
I've never put that together. Yeah. That's so cool. Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah.
That's great. Man, Takeshita going over Kenny was another all-out pushing new talent and building for the future. I forgot to mention that earlier, but this match was cool. Bola rocked. It was cool. I liked it a lot.
Seems like a fun, like almost punk rocky wrestling event that happens once a year. PWG just like has that vibe in general, but be awesome to go sometime, but I don't think we're ever going to get in. So
Have you heard about they do this show called like the Mystery Vortex where nothing is announced?
No.
It's just like whoever shows, like it's like they don't have a card. And that was when Aleister Black and Brody King won the tag team titles like 2 years ago. That was at Mystery Vortex. So it was like nobody even knew that they were going to be there. And then Aleister Black and Brody King just showed up and like won the tag titles. And I think that was like Ultra Mantis Black came out of retirement and like wrestled a match at that too. Like PWG does some like weird fun shit that I really like the sound of.
Keeping it interesting in a way that like AEW and WWE can't because they're kind of too big and they gotta stay on their like formulas that they got when they're on their train.
Big shows where they don't announce cards.
Got him. Oh man.
Busted.
Do you want to do high spots and botch spots?
Yes.
So a little honorable mention to something we really liked and something that we did not care for too much. My high spot, just like something that we haven't brought up that I thought was cool. I really liked the venue a lot. Like it was Opera House-esque, it was Hammerstein Ballroom-esque. Like it's just like a cool looking spot, and it makes for like an indie promotion that is kind of like the poster boy for a very long time was the poster boy for like bingo halls and like that kind of joke. It doing the Bola at this venue really lends a lot of like credibility to like, this is their big show of the year, and this is like a really cool I thought the venue selection and the way that they staged it, the way that everything looked, A+.
Yeah, venue looked great. It was it felt almost like an ECW show, which I will always like because I'm old as shit.
Yeah, I like the opera vibe.
Yeah.
High spot for me, I'm going to say Black Taurus. I think
hell yeah.
For me, like that's the dude, man. Like if you got to sign somebody like Speedball Mike Bailey, obviously get him, you know, as long as he's happy right now, but man, there's some money there. There's some dream matches to be booked with our boy Black Taurus. Yeah. So I want to see all of them, and that's my my dream bingo card for 2024.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
My high spot's going to be this thing that I was referencing earlier with, so Bandido, when he gets, like when he is being announced in the middle of the ring, he does this really amazing flourish that I wrote down like every single part of because I thought it was so sick, and I just don't really remember Bandido from previous exposure to him, so I was very taken with him for the whole match. But what he does is he gets into the ring, when they say his name, he takes off, like he goes into like a really wide leg, almost like sumo squat stance, real wide leg, and he hits them like at a perfect beat, right? So he goes into this wide leg stance, he dramatically takes off his like tassel vest, and then he dramatically throws it to the floor, and then he does his big like arm flourish, and then he starts handing out the money.
Yeah,
but it just, he does it like bam 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 while they're like announcing his name, and it was so sick.
That interaction, man. Like he gets like the sports entertainment part of it, man. Like yeah, so much.
I just loved him the whole time. He also like, he would do a sick move, and then he would do the like sexy shoulder shimmy to the crowd to be like fuck yeah, like it was so sick.
That was awesome.
I think WrestleMania weekend he had a show, or he had a match against Speedball that was just like fucking great,
right?
That we should watch because it's just like so much fun.
Yeah, I feel like I might have watched it, but yeah.
Botch spot, I didn't really have like there like
yeah.
What is there to complain about?
It was
I don't know.
Fun show. Like, I mean, like if maybe if you want to split hairs, maybe the slow motion spot for some of it.
That's what I was going to say, too, but it didn't bug me that much. Like, I wouldn't consider it a botch spot, but it's the only thing I have negative
you
to
got
say.
It. Like, it's honestly, like, it didn't bother me so much that I'd mark it as a botch spot, but, like, again, like, we're splitting hairs. Like, I thought the whole show was, like, everything I saw was a lot of fun and really well done. Yeah.
You know what my botch spot was? It's a subset of the slow-mo sequence, one specific part of the slow-mo sequence. Was when the when all the marks in the crowd tried to get a slow-mo "This is awesome" chant going, but they couldn't do it at the same time, and I was like, I was watching it, and it was like hearing fucking like 100 people going "This is aw," but all offset from each other. I was like, this is what hell would sound like for me. this is
but it would be fight
to torture me for
it would
eternity.
Be fight forever that they were chanting.
That's there you go. Give the people what they came for, you know. They want to hear us kvetch, they want to hear us you know. Bola was fun. If there's other PWG stuff that we should check out, fucking drop us a line. We're at Instagram and Twitter at Stone Cold Shots Pod and Stone Cold Shots Podcast. We're on Facebook at Stone Cold Shots, all that good stuff. I've gotten really lazy at updating it, but we're still there.
Still there.
We'll check it if you send us a message.
Still hanging around. Lauren, do you want to see my line again here?
Shoot us a line. No, I was going to set you up perfectly here. You can leave us a rating and review on your podcasting app of choice.
What's the line? Want to leave us a review? Five stars. Oh, fuck. Five bald heads, slap them down on the app. Really help us out, and we'd love you forever.
Hell yeah.
Bye.
All right. We'll see you in a minute.
Bye.